come and take me to the river and make me whole. It's down with the old and up with the new. The heart reset my life, take two. Oh Lord, have mercy on this weary soul.
Welcome to Go Yard with Mama Mac, helping you to hit a home run in life when you feel like striking out.
Hey there, everyone. Go Yard audience, good to be here, right here with you tonight, live in the studio. Sometimes we cannot be, but we usually are. But our work sometimes keeps us from being here live, but tonight we are. And I'm making a big point of that because the topic tonight, there might be some that want to call in with questions specifically for Dr. Angel tonight. And that call-in number is 727-441-3000. And you can't text tonight because I went off and left my phone at home tonight, Angel. I normally have it, but you can't text. So if you want to comment, you're going to have to call in tonight, 727-441-3000. And we just want to remind you of our website, which is goyard2014.org. It's an O-R-G, not a .com. Goyard2014.org, where we have tons of shows, over 2 years. And with me is the famous, the amazing, the wise, the absolutely knowledgeable and experienced Dr. Angel Falzoni, as always.
Good evening, you know, Mama
we
just Mac.
Don't you think we need a drum roll, Bobby, or something for her?
Oh, yes.
We do, don't we? Hang on, you know, because she is amazing. Licensed mental health counselor, PhD, very busy in the field, clinically working every day. Ah, there we go for Dr. Angel.
Yes,
thank you. Bobby, you play the drums really well.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, I didn't know you had that drum set right there behind us. Wow, that's cool. Anyway, okay, so we are live. If you want to call in, Bobby will answer the phone. He'll patch it through to us, 727-441-3000. We are in a series. Last week we had to divert from that because I absolutely had no throat whatsoever. And so we used a show on laughter that we had done, and we got some comments, some good comments on that.
Awesome.
On that show. That's a good show. So, but back to the website. We have a whole lot of shows there, don't we? And why do we tell people that?
Yeah, we do. And we have 2 years and growing worth of shows on our website, and it's really a great tool for you. You know, when we lay out a show, you might not be going through or experiencing that topic that week.
Right.
But later on, life might hit a curveball that you weren't expecting, and we have all those shows archived. So go back when it's relevant to you and take notes and take advice and take counsel and get some tools to really help you through those moments.
Absolutely. And, you know, they're all titled. So it's not like shooting in the dark to pick a show. They have titles on. A lot of times we've done series, so it might say part one, part two, part three. And probably good idea to do in sequence because we probably built on concepts. This is another one of our famous series. And we started it maybe about 3 weeks ago, Understanding Dysfunctional Families. And if you don't mind, Dr. Angel, give them an idea of why we even want to do a series like this.
Ooh, wow. It's a root issue.
A root issue.
A lot of people have come from families that had some kind of dysfunction in some way or not. We know about the dysfunction, it's out on the table. We can talk about it. Some families, it's just very under the rug and we're not sure. And so working with people that have struggled, and these struggles that can happen from dysfunctional families can impact our current adult life and relationships and our parenting and how if our depression or anxiety, a lot of this can have some root issues. That's why I call it a root issue in some of our experiences growing up in our families of origin. So we wanted to tackle this major topic and put some light on it.
Absolutely.
And it's not all about casting blame. This is not go pick up the phone and call your mom. Oh, my gosh, you guys were so dysfunctional.
No, don't do that. That does not work.
This is about shedding light on it so we could recognize it and so that we can learn how to heal through it and do something about it.
Absolutely. So we have a couple shows in this series that will be put up on our website in the next day or two. But in the meantime, they are right here at the station, TanTalkNetwork.com. And you can access the podcast, go to Go Yard, and you will be able to find those shows, the first couple of this series, if you missed them. And again, last week was the show on laughter. So now we're back to dysfunctional families. And in general, can you give us kind of a definition, doctor, what a dysfunctional family is? I mean, you kind of talked about it just now, but do you have any better of a definition?
It's a broad topic when we use that term. So it's really any condition that just interferes with a healthy family functioning.
Okay.
So sometimes families may have this overall identity as working in dysfunction.
Right.
And sometimes families may go through periods of time where some of these dysfunctional things kind of happen, and then they kind of can rebound and come back to a healthy status. So it can be a whole lot of stuff that happens that can create that, or even just perceive things.
Right.
And so that's why this is a huge topic that we're tackling. And, you know, we've identified in future shows, or past shows, not future.
Yeah,
I don't have a DeLorean with me tonight.
Right.
You know, we've really defined it. We've looked at what are some of those characteristics of dysfunctional families? And we really gave a lot of great detailed information, you know, and I will encourage you to go back and really listen
exactly.
to that show.
Yes, do.
And then we started to outline types of dysfunctional families. And we talked about deficit parents, and we talked about controlling parents.
Deficit parents. What's a deficit parent or a deficient parent? What is it?
Those are the ones that hurt their children, not by what they're doing, but by what they're not doing.
In other words, not taking care of their children properly.
Not taking care of them the way they need to be.
Not providing a safe environment or...
Or could be emotionally not taking care
exactly.
of the child that they need. Physically or emotionally and...
Or even financially.
Or financially, absolutely. Then we went on and identified controlling parents, which are the parents who kind of fail to let their kids have appropriate responsibility. You know, we endearingly call them the helicopter parents.
Right.
Because they kind of hovering
kind
over
of a
the
new
child.
Term, isn't it? In
it
the
is.
Last few years? I don't know.
We definitely call them that. And they're okay. the kinds that we think we're doing everything that's best for our child. But the problem is we're so on top of it, we're stifling their ability to learn,
right.
grow, fail, and, you know, make mistakes, hear the word no. And so controlling parents lead to some issues that can go on later on in life. And although their whole heart and mentality is the best for their child,
sure.
the methods are kind of creating some dysfunction in the process.
And that was 2 weeks ago tonight, October 20th, if you look that show up. Now, tonight we're going to a different kind of parenting mm-hmm. that is also dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And I think tonight's topic is particularly important because in my years of pastoral counseling and being with people, I have had so many people that grew up in households like we're going to describe tonight.
Yes.
I have heard this, and I don't know about you and your profession, how much is how common this has been, but I've heard this a lot, and I think this applies, and it'll be a great help to a lot of listeners tonight.
Absolutely. And, you know, in dealing with the patients I have dealt with over the years, I would definitely say these next two types of families we're going to identify probably would reach about 85% of the patients
right.
I've seen.
Okay.
So it is very impactful.
Yes.
And one subject people don't want to talk about.
Right.
It usually is the elephant in the family discussions or in the family gatherings. And we know it exists in our family. We're just not willing to put words on it. And we're not able to communicate about this.
And probably that's because of shame, et cetera, right?
Embarrassment.
Shame,
all kinds of things can underline that. And a lot of times it can be underlined because everybody's trying to blame themselves for that problem.
Right.
And taking responsibility. So there's a lot that undergoes this. But these next two types of families really have future impact towards how we develop and grow into adults.
Even more so, I think, than the ones we've already discussed, right?
Yes.
So what is the topic, the first one, of this type of parents and families?
Alcohol or substance abuse parents.
Alcohol or substance abuse parents. Now, we have done a series on substance abuse. I think we've done a couple shows on alcoholism also. I don't know. We'd have to go back and look. But this is different. These are parents and how this relates to the children
yes.
in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Parents that really use substances or alcohol as their crutch through life on a daily basis, probably.
Yes.
Not just maybe once a year. We're not talking about
I'm not talking about, you know, we have our glass of wine with holiday dinners or we have a couple of
We're
beers
not talking
with
about
the football
that at
game
all.
On Sunday. We're talking about the abusers of substances or alcohol.
Mostly very regularly, daily or every other
yes.
day type thing. Okay. And you know, these so many of the children that come from these type of homes don't even, it's by my experience, correct me if I'm wrong, that they don't even realize that they've been abused because they grew up in that type of home. A lot of them think, doesn't everybody have parents that drink a lot or whatever?
Right, they don't see the dysfunction
they
of
don't
it.
See, that's what
it's
I'm trying to say.
Extremely,
that's, yes.
They're normal.
Yeah.
And so
they think everybody's parents are like that, right?
They do. And then they become adults and they are, or maybe they're older children or teenagers and they go into other people's homes and they're starting to see, wait a minute, your mom's not drinking or your mom's not, you know, doesn't have
drunk at five
or high on cocaine or passed out in bed still. Then
right.
They start seeing their, it isn't what everyone else is going through.
Exactly.
Then there's a shame about it. So now we have to cover it up and
right.
hide it. And
right.
so there's a great deal of energy that goes in hiding.
Exactly.
What's happening in these homes.
Yeah. And these homes are, by definition, I suppose, very chaotic, right?
Very, very. They're characterized by extreme chaos. And the reason is an indifferent. So what happens is when a parent is, or caregiver, whoever that is, the primary caregivers are using substances, we have times that are going to be really, really great. You know, sometimes
like they might be almost manic, right? They might
be happy. Of times. We're
going
to have the most amazing memories sometimes. And then there might, and that might be when they're on the substance or when they're not, depending on what they're using. Some people have, you know, get real euphoric when they're on a substance and life is really great.
Yeah.
And then when they're coming down, that anger and all those negative feelings, and now the kids are getting yelled and screamed at. And it's so, we don't know if I'm going to get, I love you or get the hell out of my face kind of thing today.
Right.
So it's an unpredictable environment.
And so that, therefore the chaos.
It's total chaos.
And the unpredictability, but yet it is almost predictable. You know, as the kids get older, they begin to realize this is the way it is. This is the way it's going to be, you know. But the daily unpredictability, is mom or dad going to be drunk when I get home from school today? Are they going to be passed out? Are they going to be gone?
Absolutely.
Looking
for
their fix.
Those are real fears. I can tell you how many children I have worked with that had parents that just disappeared.
Yeah.
Going to get their substance and didn't come back for days at a time. And
right.
Then, you know, the children were removed and brought into care. But that's a real fear.
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you the number of people I've talked to through the years that grew up like this that said their parent would disappear. Actually, for 2 or 3 days at a time. One is a good friend of mine, and she had to take care of the, you know, younger siblings.
Yes.
Mom was gone. Okay, we got to feed them. What are we going to do? And this was how they grew up, you know?
Oh, another risk. These children that come from these families are really high risks for all kinds of vulnerabilities to be victimized in so many ways. Sometimes it's the people that the parents are bringing in the home.
Right.
That are using drugs with them.
Right.
And not keeping good company. And then we might have legal implications. And now mom or dad's in jail. And, you know, so this can spiral out of control very quickly.
Oh.
And any day, their environment could be at risk. And there's where the chaos is.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And the unpredictability. So
I can't let people know what's happening because I may lose my family, and a bad family to a child is still their family.
Still their family.
It's what they know. It's who they love.
And you brought up the word shame a moment ago, and I have seen this with people that are now adults that grew up in a family like that. They really don't like to talk about it that much because they realize by now as an adult, if they're not participating in that same type of drug or alcohol dependence, then they have begun to realize that wasn't okay.
Correct.
And so it's like hard to talk about.
They don't want to talk about it. And there is a lot of shame, partly because a lot of kids grow up blaming themselves. Well, if I listened better, if I could make better grades, if I didn't fight with my sister as much, if, you know, what if, and fill in the blank, because they'll fill it in with millions of reasons why that parent was using drugs or alcohol. And every one of them in their mind is their fault.
But the parents, generally speaking, are putting that kind of
sometimes
junk.
I wouldn't
have
to drink so much if you guys could just get along.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yes, you make me use because you don't clean your room. You don't do this. You don't do that. You don't cook like you're supposed to. Whatever.
Fill in the blank. Yeah. We've probably heard it all during the course of treatment. But with these families, the rules are constantly changing. So things that are the rules today are not the rules tomorrow.
Aha.
The rules are changing.
There's that unpredictability again.
And the problem with that is they're not written. meaning nobody really knows what the rules are, and they're always in this constant state of change. So I'm anxious. Yeah. Is this okay? Is this not okay? So kids in these families grow up not only with guilt and shame for taking responsibility, but a lot of anxiety.
A lot of anxiety, yes. And I think as adults then, they're the ones a lot of times that are having to get mood stabilizers a lot of times or something at the doctor.
Or they can be very crippled with anxiety to where they're just afraid to adult in their own life.
That's
right. It can be very crippling. Promises are not kept.
You know, yes. And I've had some experience with this with somebody in my family close to me. And that really seemed that the promises would get made about Christmas and Thanksgiving and
vacations
and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then when that day came,
the bottom dropped out of the family and it didn't happen. They may not remembered the promise, or they just got high and did something else that day, or got drunk, or
so out of it that they were totally
unable to do
it on the sofa while their children opened Christmas presents. And I've witnessed that. And that is very painful.
Very.
For the children, for everybody, for the spouse who doesn't do the drugs or the alcohol. It's very hard.
You know, it's interesting. When I work with adults who have come from substance abuse families, one of the things that they will target in therapy is the broken promises. That
really
is one of the lasting scars for them.
Broken promises. I'm going to put a star by that because you know what? You're exactly right. And that does happen.
They can almost recall every one of them.
Yeah.
Like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. It amazes me. That was one of those variables that I've, you know, just kind of qualitatively looked at through the course of therapy.
Right.
They remember, and they remember every broken promise and how it hurts and the pain that comes with every one of them.
And see, in a home that is not alcohol or substance abuse driven, then an occasional, oh, man, I forgot your game. Okay. Or, you know what, this appointment just came up. I'm so sorry, Johnny. I'll definitely be there next week. Those
scar.
Kinds of things, they don't remember. They don't scar. That's a good point. They don't scar like the children of substance or alcohol abuse.
And I think part of the reason is children who come from substance abuse families, they live from happy moment to happy moment. That's what keeps them going.
Wow. Yeah.
And so when we have a promise of something happy, if it's a family trip to the beach or if it's putting up the Christmas tree, it doesn't even have to be something big or expensive. I'm living for that moment because those are the moments that they treasure and they keep that's how they feed themselves emotionally or happy moment to happy moment. So when I'm promised, I am like living and waiting for this moment and now it doesn't happen. It just is such a letdown. It's such a disappointment.
The letdown is horrible.
Absolutely. And how am I going to survive? When is this next happy moment happening?
Right.
If it's going to happen again. And so
the disappointment.
It is very strong. It leaves very lasting scars for the adults. So, and they can't trust their parents. So kids aren't feeling safe. They're not feeling secure. They're not feeling valued. So those are pretty big traits to have to experience and carry through childhood.
Go ahead a minute. Wow.
It's okay.
I joke.
You're good. Expectations will vary. Just like rules vary from day to day, expectations will vary from day to day. So a kid may come home and do what they feel like their normal routine is, and now all of a sudden the parent ripped the rug out from that, and this is your expectation, and they're in trouble, and you know now it's not a happy moment again, and it cycles that cycle. And most kids who come from substance abuse parents, all they're trying to do is what it takes to make my parent happy.
Oh, that's sad too.
They live their life to try and make this parent happy.
Because maybe for a few minutes, everything will be calm.
It'll be okay.
It'll look like my next door neighbor's family, right?
Absolutely. And because they live from happy moment to happy moment, whatever I can do to make that moment happy, I'm willing to do. These will be the kids. They're very loyal to their families. And they will part the Red Sea to make their parent happy or their caregiver happy.
Wow. Okay. If any of you out there want to ask a question about this type of home, call us now and Dr. Angel can answer. I can't, but she can. 727-441-3000. We want to give you that opportunity. Or maybe you've lived like this growing up and you're just beginning to realize.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, I didn't realize. I do remember all the broken promises.
Right,
I do
and some of our audience may be feeling that way right now.
Yeah.
Ooh, all right, let's do that song. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, daddy, don't know when. But we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.
My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed and said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know.
This is Megan, an independent ambassador for Plexus, the pink drink. There is finally a healthy solution to help you lose weight. It's a most natural product that will burn fat, not muscle. People around the country are experiencing amazing results, and you can too. Check out my independent ambassador website for my contact info, testimonials, and product information at mkramer, K-R-A-M-E-R, dot myplexus, P-L-E-X-U-S, products.com.
Prompt professional service is what you will receive when you allow Marcia McAllister of Charles Rittenberg Realty to help find that perfect home or list your home for sale. With over 23 years of experience in the Tampa Bay area, you will enjoy a smooth transaction from start to finish. Call Marcia today at 727-417-0707. Now is a great time to buy or sell a home. Call Marcia McAllister at 727-417-0707.
Great songs. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We're talking about a very important topic today, and we invite you to join our conversation with a question or a comment, 727-441-3000. 727-441-3000. This is Go Yard, and it's all about hitting home runs in life and not striking out. And we tackle some really difficult topics, Dr. Angel. We're not afraid of any topic. There's nothing we won't tackle. And the reason is because there's so many things that affect all of us from childhood, et cetera, that need to be explored that might help us become better, productive adults, right?
Absolutely. And I think we kind of maybe tackle those things people don't want to talk about even more than normal people, you know, because the fact that if we don't want to talk about it, there's a reason
there's a reason
to talk about it.
Right.
It's holding us back from that go yard life.
That's exactly right. So that's what we're all about. And so you can also hear our shows on Saturday and Sunday at noon on StarcomRadioNetwork.com. Okay. Let's talk more about the children of alcoholics, substance abuse, drug addicts, et cetera, and how that this their lives are affected. We were talking about how expectations vary from day to day. Kids that grow up in homes like this don't even know what if it's this is expected today. Tomorrow, it's going to be something totally different, or that doesn't even count anymore. We don't have to do that anymore.
Absolutely. And that's
our homework or clean our room or...
And that's where that, you know, unpredictability,
yes,
you know, breeds anxiety. And so all this chaos, and that's part of that chaotic environment we identified right at the top.
Right, exactly.
You know, parents may be really strict in one moment and maybe indifferent in another moment. So you may get extreme harsh punishments happening, or they may not care. what's happening. And so there's always that fear.
Right.
What's going to happen when I get in trouble? Is this one of those times it's going to be really severe and harsh? Or is this one of those times like they don't remember?
Right.
You don't know. And so there's more. That's fear.
Right.
You know, kids that yes. live in that, not knowing what to expect. So when school had to call home because I didn't turn in my, what am I walking in the door to
right.
when
I
get home?
I'm going to be beaten when I get home. Don't you think that all this unpredictability is probably the root, maybe or may not, I don't know, very important to this anxiety disorders and panic attacks and all that kind of stuff that we see in so many adults. They've grown in up in such unpredictable environments.
Okay. You know, my normal response
yes,
is
could be.
That is not my response. It absolutely is the root.
Oh, my gosh. Bobby, this is... We got one right. We got one right. It is the root. It's not just could be. You know,
definite.
It's definite. I tease her about that could be because I know you're always have to be very careful about what you say about this. Yes, is the cause. But explain why you could have such a definite answer there.
Well, looking back, I mean, we can get into this and talk about this all day. But when we study the brain and how the brain develops with things like unpredictability and instability and not being able to trust and having these things in our family environment actually impacts the way our brains develop.
Okay.
And so we know for a fact this breeds things like anxiety and depression and difficulty attaching to other and having healthy quality relationships later on in life. It affects us in those ways. We know that. By certain that it doesn't mean everybody's gonna have all of these things. That doesn't mean we're all
no,
gonna
but
have
research
all,
shows,
but
right?
It is very much tied and correlated to it. So yes, it is a root cause. It is not the only causes, but it is a root.
So somebody's driving down the road right now and they're listening to us and they're hearing this and they're going, I grew up in a home like that. I do have panic attacks. I do have an anxiety disorder. I do have a hard time trusting people.
I'm going to tell you there's a lot of hope. First of all, you're not alone.
Okay.
Tons of people have grown up in homes like this. And the hope is you can get through this and
right.
you can heal.
Yes.
And you can move forward.
And you can help
you
other
can
people.
Be better for it.
Right.
And so that's where the hope really lies. If I can just acknowledge, okay, yeah. I do struggle with this, and I did come from a family similar to this or had some of these traits, and I really, yes, I struggle, but I don't want anybody to know. Let's acknowledge it.
Right.
And now we can start moving on and getting help and healing from that and learning how I can cope and how I can reduce my anxiety and
yes.
how I can move forward in my life.
Oh, excellent. 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 What about the secrecy involved with a lot of these families? Isn't this something that a lot of people then as adults, they're real private, they're
yes.
real secretive.
Yes.
They don't want to, they have a hard time bonding with their significant other or their wife or their husband or their children even because everything's a secret. And
what happens in this family stays in this family,
right? Yeah.
Secrecy is huge. And a lot of families that have this going on, they will be sitting next to you in the pews at church.
Oh,
they
yeah.
will
be you wouldn't have any idea.
You will not know.
You won't know.
They will look great on the outside. A lot of them look highly functioning on the
outside. Great on paper, right?
And then underneath all the surface is all these secrets.
Right.
And secrets is a huge component. And when there's something's in secret, we, first of all, can't get help. We can't acknowledge it.
Right.
We can't move on.
We got to acknowledge it.
And the secret doesn't just extend outside the family, but it's a secret. And we're not talking inside the family about this either.
I was getting ready to ask you about that because it's one thing to not share it with the relatives. It's another thing to not even discuss it at all at home.
We do not discuss it.
I mean, in other words, yeah, you come home and mom's passed out and she wakes up the next day or whatever the case may be and you never even question what was wrong or what happened.
No,
right?
And it's interesting because, you know, working in therapy with children who've come from situations like that, when they're talking about it, they will use code words. They won't even use words. They won't say, you know, my mom was drunk or my mom was. They'll make up a code word. It was a blue day.
Really?
Because they won't even put that language to it.
I've never heard that.
Yes.
That's interesting.
They will talk about it in code words or draw it in their drawings when we do art therapy or expressive play therapies. We'll see it come out that way. But the words that they use can be very interesting. How?
Oh, that is very... Because
of the secrecy into it.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
You know, one really big thing that stifles us is that emotions aren't expressed in these families.
Right, right.
It's not okay to give hugs. It's not okay to show I love you. Mm-hmm. And it's all about acts of service and duty.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's all about what? Do that again.
Acts of service and duty.
Acts of service and duty. So explain that.
Well, the way love is displayed in these families is when the kids are doing something for the parents, when they're cleaning up their mess, when they're cooking dinner, when they're taking care of the other kids. That is the way they express love. So they become highly vulnerable to be adults who are either A, substance abusers themselves,
okay,
or B, codependents.
Because, and you're going to have to define codependent for a lot of our audience. I understand it, but I'll tell you, that's a term that I think a lot of people don't get.
Well, codependency is really when I believe it's my responsibility to take care of everybody and fix everything for everybody. I mean, that's really easiest way of saying what it is. I take on everybody else's problems as my responsibility.
Exactly.
And I'm neglecting myself in that process.
Right.
And so what happens is they become having relationships with people who need them.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of models that family environment.
Well, yeah, they grew up with that. Mom and dad had to have us there to clean up their messes or to, get them another beer or whatever the case may be. So invariably, they look for people that they are needed for
that
those.
That need them to be needed. Now, they may not find a substance abuse. They may be able to break that cycle of, okay, I know that, you know, using substances is wrong and unhealthy. They may find it in other ways.
Right.
Then tap a healthy label on that. Maybe they find someone with a lot of medical needs and they can caretake for and it makes them feel like the hero. But really what they're doing is playing out their same role that they did as a child into their adulthood.
Oh,
and
wow.
It really is an unhealthy relationship style. They'll have terrible quality relationships when we're codependent because we can't give what we don't have.
Exactly.
It's not our job to do everyone else's. It's not our responsibility to take care of the world.
Right.
And we can't do it.
Right. And so, therefore, they get to that adult phase and they realize that perhaps they have gotten in a relationship or married somebody that was a lot like dad or mom, right?
And maybe in traits, maybe not in the specific behavior.
Okay.
And I've seen people who've come from families like this, they've adopted special needs kids.
Oh, okay.
It's a great, admirable thing to adopt a special needs kid. I'm not saying everyone who does it has this, but this one particular client I had, it was her codependency needed to be needed, and this person would need her forever because her children had just grown to adulthood, and she realized her need was used up with them.
Oh,
they're adults, and they were moving on, and she needed to have that codependent connection.
Wow.
So when we got down to the core of really why she made that decision, it was eye-opening for her through the course of therapy. And things can look very admirable on the outside. It's why are we doing this and what is it filling in us?
It can look good to people around us. Oh, look at her. Look how much she sacrifices taking care of all those kids or whatever. Okay. And so you say these kinds of kids are at a high risk.
Well, they're very much at a high risk for victimization. The parents, when we're using drugs and alcohol, first of all, we are not able to watch the kids the way they need to be watched.
Right, right.
So anybody and anything can come lure our kids away. We're not giving them the emotional connection that they need. We're not filling their emotional needs. So kids are highly at high risk to be lured by predators for sexual abuse and all kinds of stuff that could go wrong because they need to be loved. They need that affection. We're created and wired for that affection.
So these parents that use substances, alcohol, whatever, that's abuse. I mean, this is abuse to their kids, right? I mean, we know that we want to talk about abusive parents too, but it's abusive to be an alcoholic or an addict,
for the children the way that need to be cared for. Are we financially okay? A lot of families who are using substances have financial difficulties. Now, some can hide it really well because they were wealthy to start with and they're doing just fine. But some, it creeps into so many aspects. And when I can't be present and I'm not watching and I'm not emotionally available, it's abusive.
It's abusive, absolutely. And it's just setting up a whole, I don't know what the word is, but just that thing in kids where they're fearful. They're fearful of the next day. They're fearful if mom going to be drunk tonight when I get home, on and on and on. And it just, they live on the edge. Kids like this, they live on the edge. That's been my experience.
We are not created to live that way.
No,
so
we need to live
at peace. These kids are insecure. These kids are angry. These kids are frustrated. These kids are emotionally starved.
Right. And they're waiting for the next shoe to drop, right? That something bad's going to happen again. You know, dad's going to lose his job again or, you know.
We never know. And there's a lot of family crisis that happens with this problem in a family. And it could wrap itself in so many packages. I couldn't identify every one of them for you because there's just one family crisis to another. But we have to keep them all in secret and we don't have supports. And so, like I said, they may be sitting next to you in the pews of church and you may never know.
Never know. So if you're driving down the road or you're listening, you know, on your tablet or your device or whatever, and you go, wait a minute, I grew up in a home like that. And I know we're going to get to this probably in the next week or so, but I love the fact that you just brought up the fact that there is hope. Do you want to go back over that point before we talk more about these abusive parents? I want our listeners to know that you can come out of the bad effects.
Oh, absolutely.
Of growing up like this.
You can heal from those negative effects.
You can.
Does it? It's affecting you now.
Right.
But when we can acknowledge it.
Right.
Stop. Look, how is this affecting me? Yes, I do, Dr. Angel. I'm struggling with my relationship. Yes, I tend to want to do everything for everybody else. Yes, I feel I don't know how to love my own children because I didn't grow up with that and I don't know how to give that to them.
Right.
I know I should love and hug them. I've heard that so many times. But
oh, I have two in counseling. I don't know how to hug my children. I don't know how to tell them I love them. I just can't do it. I've heard that over and over again through the years.
You can heal.
Yes.
You can make up your own deficits because there are deficits that happen as you're growing when you experience this that happen to you emotionally, but you can make those up and become even a stronger, better person than you could have had you not had this experience.
Exactly. Absolutely. Let's talk about abusive parents because even though we acknowledge that alcoholics and addicts are abusive parents, but let's say that we've got a family where there is no substance abuse or alcohol abuse, but yet there's still
verbal or physical abuse, and that's just abuse.
Abuse.
And abuse can be one-time events. It can be something that happens chronically in a family.
And I think it's much more common than people want to talk about. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it, and we'll talk about a few of those. But I also think it's extremely important that our listeners identify, oh, I've been abused. Because so many times, if they haven't been physically hit, you know, or knocked across the room and break a lamp, they don't feel like they've really been abused. But they may have been very much abused, but not have had the physical component, right?
Absolutely, because there is that emotional component of emotional abuse. And it's a complicated topic, I mean, because there's so much under the umbrella, but it has lasting effects.
Yeah.
It really scars our psyche when we experience this. And you know, when we talk about trauma, and I teach therapists about trauma all the time, I liken our human being to a tree.
Okay.
And, you know, the roots are the most important part, and that's our early development. Those first few years of life is what gives us our roots that carry our tree up. So think of our development as a tree growing up. Where in our development we experienced abuse is where it's going to leave the lasting scars. If you take the bottom of a tree and cut around it, you will kill that entire oak tree. I don't care if it's 55 feet tall.
You're right.
You're going to kill it.
If you take out the root system, yeah.
Where you experience this, where it leaves the scars.
Right.
The lower more that those scars can cause damage that go upward. Doesn't mean we can't go back and heal it all because we can. But we do have to go back and do some work. So if an adult who's, you know, had healthy roots and a relatively healthy upbringing and they become an adult and they experience some tragedy, they experience, you know, maybe a victim of a crime or maybe they were raped, they heal and bounce back much quicker because they've had root systems.
Right.
So that's how we look at trauma. Think of the tree. So the lower, you know, the earlier it happens, the more damage it can cause and stifle growth going up.
And have you in practice seen people who would say to you, if you asked them, were you an abused child, would they answer perhaps, oh, no, I don't think so. But then as time progressed in therapy, you find out they were extremely abused.
Correct.
But it's almost like they put blinders on it as a young child, correct? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct. Not only do they put blinders on it, it's almost like just distant from their memory. They don't want to remember it because it's hard and harsh. And you don't have to recall the details of trauma to work through and process trauma.
Exactly.
So that's a misconception. And they don't want to acknowledge it.
Go back over that one more time. Go back. They don't have to go back over every detail to heal.
You don't have to sit
down.
Because
there's people out there that get paid money to take you right through every gory, nasty detail of the abuse. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, they do. And a lot of people in my field feel like you have to, you know, talk about every detail.
That is
traumatizing in itself.
Some people need
to verbally express where they've been through to walk through. A lot of people don't ever have to, or maybe give snippets of where they've been, or maybe not even discuss it in those terms to heal. Healing can look very different, but we do not have to walk. And, you know, that's why people don't want to get help with any kind of abuse.
Oh, this is a huge point.
Verbal, emotional, sexual.
Because it's a huge point, doctor. We're on to it. There's something very important right here. Because a lot of people will absolutely bury their head in the sand over the painful stuff because they don't want to relive it. Because it's so painful to relive it or to even think about it. When a memory comes up, they're like traumatized again.
Absolutely. So sitting on a therapist's couch and being felt forced to have to relive every moment does not sound like I would want to get help that way either. And so you don't. That's not how we heal. And healing happens in a lot of ways. And everybody's different how they heal. The way we download trauma is different. And how we heal from it is different. You do have some people, I need to get it out. They feel like they've stuffed it. It was secrets. And if they can just get it out, I can move forward.
I've heard a lot of that kind of stuff through the years.
Don't ever have to do that.
Right.
And so, and there's a spectrum in between. So just because I had this experience does not mean you have to go back and relive every trauma to walk back through it. Not true at all. You can heal.
Okay, I'm glad we debunked
that. When we look at abuse, all the abuse, we're talking about verbal, physical, and sexual abuse. I'm going to kind of lump them. They're all surrounded in secrets.
Okay.
Just like the substance abuse was. It can be aimed at verbal abuse, emotional abuse. Parents could say, oh, you're ugly, or you're fat, or you're, you know, things. It can be words to how we look, words to our intelligence. You're stupid. You're never going to be anything.
You're not lazy. Like your brother. Your brother's smart, and he always got straight A's. What's wrong with you? Why are you so dumb?
Absolutely.
I have heard people come in, sit in my office, and say that kind of thing, that they were always told that they were the dumb kid, or they were the ugly kid, or
so
whatever.
Children who experience the verbal belittling and berating are insecure. They have low self-esteem.
Yes.
They believe the lies. They have a lot of anxieties. They don't want to try something new.
Right.
Because I'm not pretty enough, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not smart enough. That becomes who they are.
Right.
And so they have difficulties with relationships. When somebody gives them a compliment, they can't hear that because it goes against everything they've believed about who they are.
Right.
So it affects them differently, but it will affect their relationships. Now, people who experience the physical abuse, that's the, you know, getting punched or slapped or, you know, marked up pretty good, creates an environment of terror, just extreme terror.
Oh, yeah.
Very fearful environment. It's violence is usually random. It's unpredictable. I don't know when it's coming, how it's coming, what it's going to look like.
Or what I'm going to say or do to tick the old man off or whatever the case may
be.
So
then it becomes, I have to go into survival mode.
Right. Yeah.
So I have to keep myself alive. I have to survive. What does that look like? You never know what that's going to have to look like. So these are the kids who really will display a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms.
And that is real, right?
It is so real.
PTSD.
PTSD is so real.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
So when I'm like working with a child in school and I'll get a call from the teacher and he's like, oh, well, little Billy was in the lunch line and a kid just accidentally bumped against him and he just turned around and beat the hell out of this kid and now we're suspending him for 5 days.
Wow.
And I'm like, oop, red light. He just had a trauma trigger. This is a kid who's been abused. This is a kid who's fearing his life, and he had somebody touch him unexpectedly. He went into survival mode. Now, is it acceptable? No, but that's what happened underneath mentally to this child, and that's what's happening all the time because they're living in that emergency fire alarm system of their brain all the time.
Wow.
And they're angry, and they feel powerless. And they have tremendous difficulties developing feelings of trust and safety.
Right.
So when I don't feel safe, my brain can't grow and develop. I can't learn like I need to learn. My whole existence is to stay alive.
Right.
So that's all my brain is focusing on every minute of every day is staying alive. So situations that aren't threatening are threatening to these kids.
Wow.
So it definitely creates a lot of damage for these children. Damage that can heal.
Yes.
The damage. And then sexual abuse, which is horrendous and horrific. And the numbers, the statistics just don't even do this feel justice because it is so underreported. But
and why is it underreported?
Secrets and dysfunction.
Yes.
So sexual abuse is part of that overall family pattern of dysfunction. There's this disorganization with this family, and we have inappropriate boundaries. Obviously, we have to have boundary issues for this to happen.
Right.
Most kids never report because they blame themselves.
Right.
Or they're told by the abuser.
They're feared.
You are the one that caused me to do this, and don't tell your mother or your dad.
Or I'm going to kill your brother if you tell.
Right.
I've had a lot of kids share that one.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You know, I just read Maya Angelou's book, Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Yeah, I've read that. That's a good one. She was abused.
She was sexually abused really bad. And when she said his name, she was selective mute for 4 years after she just said the name of the person who abused her.
She couldn't talk?
She couldn't talk for 4 years.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know,
this is big.
This is huge, especially this area of molestation, rape, sexual abuse. It is a huge problem, not just probably in our country, probably worldwide.
Yes.
But one that I think that so many people don't want to find out about because it's embarrassing or it's
shame.
Oh, surely that people don't do that, you know.
They do all the time.
They
and
do.
People you wouldn't even suspect. I cannot tell you the number of children or adults that were once children who have had these, you know, been abused by members of clergy, of high society, teachers,
coaches.
Like, unbelievable and unprecedented.
Right. Yeah.
The result of what happens, though, these children kind of grow up and they grow into adulthood and they carry on these feelings. They hate who they are.
Yeah.
They may hate their gender.
Right.
They may hate what they look like. They may hate that they feel weak, but they hate themselves. It's self-hatred. So these are the people who do a lot of self-destructive behaviors.
Yep.
The shame.
Yeah.
Shame overtakes them. They feel worthless. They'll feel like garbage. They'll feel like why should I even exist on earth? So depression is big. Suicide risk can be very big. Substance abuse is very high risk for these adults because I got to stop the pain somehow.
Right.
And then when we have adults with sexual abuse may also self-punish and have difficulties with any relationship and any sexual intimacy until they resolve that trauma for themselves.
Exactly.
So it definitely can carry on. And, you know, we were just dealing with the case of a woman in her 50s who just disclosed sexual abuse from her childhood and how it has impacted her entire life to the point where she's so riddled with anxiety, she's actually has to live in an assisted living facility.
Wow.
Way prematurely for her age, but the anxiety stifled her ability to grow through adulthood. So,
yeah.
And it went all the way back to early childhood abuse.
Right. And so, well, dear listener, if you're out there and you've told no one at any point in life about some things that happened to you as a child, you know, it's time to face some things and probably time to try to get some real meaningful help, don't you think, Doctor?
Absolutely.
And as we're going to talk next week about how you do overcome these things, it's not, we don't want to paint up such a negative, black, awful picture because this is common in our society.
Unfortunately,
physical abuse, sexual abuse.
Verbal abuse, substance abuse,
all parents. Of this, it is common, and that's why we're doing a show on it. And dear listener, you can come out from under the burden of this, the shame of this, the dysfunction of this, and you can find joy and happiness in your life in areas where maybe you just feel like you can't, you know.
Absolutely. There is hope.
Yes.
There is healing. There is another side to this. And, you know, and I think sometimes when you're in this, that you just need to know there is
hope
and a help. And there is. And there absolutely is.
And I mean, I want everybody listening to get that clear down on the inside of them, because I think as this stuff comes out and more, you know, when we in the press, you hear coaches, the coach at Penn State, you know, you all the different, you know, prominent comedian, whatever the case may be, we've heard this stuff more. It's more common in the news anymore that it's being exposed. And rightly, it should be for what it is, right? But as a result of that, it probably kind of causes people who haven't dealt with it yet to have this
There's this, yes.
A reaction.
Like, I have to hold on. You feel like you have a scarlet letter. I've
right.
heard that. You
yes,
know, where
I
everyone can
book.
See
that
my, you know, where I've been. I have the big A, abuse R, the big,
right.
you know,
and I think
alcoholic
victims,
parent.
Yes. They feel like people can tell that that's what's wrong with them, quote unquote, wrong, you know? And
yes,
yet,
they do.
Go ahead.
And, you know, and you do. You may feel like that. And you may feel like nobody's going to understand or I'm alone in this. Unfortunately, I wish to tell you this was a one event, one time thing. You are not alone. There's so many people. And there's a lot of great support groups. There's, you know, a support
I want you
group.
To mention those. Yes.
Well, I don't have them in front of me tonight, but I know there's a support group of adult children of dysfunctional families. There is a support group for that.
There
there's
is
a lot
one of adult children of alcoholics.
Adult children of alcoholics.
Excellent support group.
There's an Al-Anon, which is another one of surviving substance abuse. And then there are survivor groups for people who've experienced any kind of abuse, and
right.
you know, sexual or incest or physical abuse. There's all kinds of local support groups. And sometimes that can be just a place to go and just know I'm not alone.
Right.
Never feel pressure to share a story you're not
right.
ready to share.
No,
it's your story.
Exactly. Yes.
And I'm going to tell you the old Julie Roberts line from Pretty Woman, but I tell it to my clients all the time. You say who, you say when, you say how much. This is your story. And when you're ready.
Right.
Or if you may never need to tell that story.
Right.
And then you hold that's your power and control.
That's right.
You hold those keys.
Right. Absolutely. And so, dear listeners, there is hope. And yes, we're tackling a difficult subject, but next week we're going to really talk about overcoming the effects of your dysfunctional family unit that you grew up in. And the fact, again, as always, that there is hope and there's light at the end of this tunnel.
Yes, and we're going to give you great practical tools. So any type of dysfunction, no matter, you know, how minor you might feel after we've gone all the way through the heavy tonight, wherever you've experienced, if it was short-term, long-term, chronic, brief, abuse, or helicopter parent, it doesn't matter where
right.
you are. We're going to give you great practical tools that are going to help you live that Go Yard life.
Absolutely. And that's what Go Yard's all about, helping you hit a home run in life instead of striking out. That's what we're about. And yes, we're not afraid to tackle these hard topics. We want to hear from you. You can actually text to my phone when I have it with me, 727-888-4171 with your comments, questions, 727-888-4171. And send us an email because we're going to do another question and answer show relatively soon. And so our email address is goyard2014@gmail.com. Check out our website, goyard2014.org. Listen to us at noon Eastern on Saturday and Sundays on StarcomRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Angel, final word.
Final word. Stay tuned next week. Let's get this full circle.
Yeah.
This has been Dr. Angel.
Hey, you beat me to it. And Mama Mac bringing you what?
Go Yard.
All right. You're turkey.
Have a good night.
Okay. We'll see you next week, guys.
Good night.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.